Hello there and welcome to the IASB update. This is a summary of the IASB meeting held between the 21st and the 23rd of January 2014 at the IASB offices in London. We were joined this month by the FASB for some of the sessions via video conference link from their offices in Norwalk. I'm joined here today by Alan Teixeira and Stephen Cooper, as always. We're going to go through some of the finer points of the meeting. So without further ado, I shall hand over to Steve, who I believe is going to take us through classification and measurement, first of our financial instruments projects.
Yes, thank you. This is pretty much the end of our deliberations on the classification and measurement component to IFRS 9. We had a general discussion on the interaction between what we've been discussing on classification, measurement and insurance, given that insurance is the beginning of the re-deliberation following the re-exposure draft. And this, of course, all relates to the use of OCI for both the assets and liabilities for those with insurance contracts. The board decided to reaffirm the decision as a classification measurement to have the additional third category of fair value through OCI. Obviously, there's an interaction between that and insurance, and the ISB took the view that the decisions we've taken in financial instruments provide a toolkit that the ISB can consider when finalising the accounting model for insurance contract liabilities, but that we will further consider the use of OCI within insurance. So that was there was no decisions taken as part of that. It was just the board looking at that particular issue. In terms of decision making, this really focused on presentation and disclosure and transition. The board reconfirmed the presentation and disclosure requirements within the ED. More details about that can be found in update. We did make a decision about first-time adopters to make sure that the transition requirements for first-time adopters were aligned with the transition requirements for other parties that would apply IFRS 9 for the first time. We also discussed first-time application, and we confirmed what was in the ED, namely that once complete, IFRS 9 can only be adopted early in its complete version, and that the ability to adopt earlier versions of IFRS 9 will be withdrawn. However, there will be a six-month period following the publication of IFRS 9 where people can continue to early adopt one of the earlier versions. This we left this in because of the possibility that somebody might be in the process of working through the adoption early of one of those earlier versions of IFRS 9, particularly if they're a first-time adopter of IFRS. We didn't want to disadvantage them. However, we wanted to get rid of the earlier versions of IFRS 9, which obviously all arose because of the way we've approached the project with the staged deliberation of the various issues. Once IFRS 9 is complete, which will be later this year, then first time the early adoption will only be permitted for the standard itself. We haven't yet made a decision about the effective date. That'll be next month, I believe, but other than that, essentially, this means that all the deliberations on classification and measurement are now complete.
Great news. Okay, fantastic. Staying with financial instruments for the moment, Alan, impairment.
Yeah, thanks, Chris. That's almost the last. Well, it's the last leg of IFRS 9, not the last leg of the financial instruments project, because we've still got portfolio hedging and I think a discussion paper due out shortly on that. But in terms of impairment, this was the last technical meeting for the board, and it enabled the board to conclude its deliberations on the impairment model. Most of the discussion was about disclosure and making sure that the board was comfortable with the disclosure requirements they've been considering for this. I'll just mention a couple and then go back to the disclosure objective, but the board actually confirmed the proposal to require a reconciliation between the opening and closing balance of the loss allowance, and also to retain a requirement to show reconciliation between the opening and closing balance of the gross carrying amount of financial assets. So, but the important thing is that what the board is trying to do is that they're going to try and clarify the objective, and we've, you know, over the last year or so been trying to improve the clarity of these objectives, is to make sure that when somebody picks up the information, they understand what the key drivers for change in the gross carrying amount are and the extent to which the changes relate to changes in the loss allowance during the period. So getting that objective is very, very important. This is not just about a mechanical disclosure of reconciling items. There's also, I think if anybody wants to read the detail on this, it's going to be a lot easier to pick up ISB updates, so I'm not going to go through all the modified changes. But certainly they confirm the proposals for disclosure about collateral and other credit enhancements. So you can see what sort of collateral you've got supporting debt, for example. In terms of the disclosure objectives, I will mention those very briefly. And as I said, they're very important because if you understand what the financial statements are trying to convey, in order to understand that, you need to look back at and see what the objective of the requirements is. And we're trying to make sure we understand how an entity has managed its credit risk in the context of the credit loss impairment model. We want to understand the methods and assumptions and information used to estimate what they've been doing. And we also want to understand the credit risk profile inherent in the financial instruments, including credit concentrations, for example. And probably more importantly, most importantly, is how things have changed. Because this is a model that's supposed to respond to changes. We want to understand how those changes have been reflected in the financial statements. There are quite extensive disclosure requirements with this, both qualitative and quantitative. And I think the easiest thing to do if you read ISB Update, it gives you a good analysis of some slight changes to the information that was included in the exposure draft. The last thing is, of course, is what's not been said. The FASB is still considering its model, so we're now finalising ours, and the FASB has still got to conclude its the way it's going to be finalising its expected loss model.
Okay, thanks very much, Alan. As you mentioned, ISB Update is a written summary of the events taking place in the board meeting. You can download that if you go to the top navigation of the IFRS Foundation website. You'll see the Stay Informed tab, and you'll be able to download it from there. Okay, moving on. Another project where we're into the early stages of re-deliberations, insurance contracts. Stephen.
Yeah, this is the first discussion the board had after the feedback we received on the re-exposure draft for insurance. In fact, it was a joint meeting with the FASB. Although the two boards had different proposals out, two different exposure drafts, and we are also at different stages in terms of our deliberations because the ISB was seeking feedback only on a limited number of aspects. This being the second exposure draft that we've issued, the FASB is seeking input on all aspects of its insurance model, it being the first exposure draft for them. Nevertheless, of course, because of the similarity between the proposals and the importance of getting convergence as much as possible, this was done on a joint basis. The staff for each board gave a summary of the feedback from their comment letters, but also the feedback from the outreach that they've done more generally, and quite extensive meetings have been held on this. And also there were separate summaries of the feedback from users. Partly, of course, that came from comment letters, but there was also, as usual, a big effort made to have meetings to obtain further input from the users of those financial statements. From the ISB perspective, we discussed the five key areas that were subject of the exposure draft, the participating contracts, OCI, the revenue presentation, the transition, and then the unlocking of the contractual cash flows. Fair to say that there's been quite a lot of support for the unlocking aspect of the ED, quite a lot of support for the transition proposals that we had, but then rather more mixed views on participating contracts, the use of OCI, and also the revenue presentation. And they were issues to do from a conceptual perspective, cost-benefit perspective, complexity perspective. Plenty of alternative suggestions provided, such as providing an option in terms of the use of OCI, different ways of presenting the income statement, and also different ways of applying either mirroring or some other approach to the participating contract. So these alternatives will be discussed and those issues analysed in more detail by the staff, then presented to the board in future meetings for for decisions to be taken about the way forward.
Okay, great stuff. Well, we look forward to further updates on that. Another joint discussion with the FASB coming up, albeit one that was nearly was shifted around a bit due to adverse weather conditions in Norwalk, leases.
Right, and thanks, Chris. And as it was probably the first substantive discussion on leases since the completion of the comment period. We'd had a discussion prior to Christmas in which we'd looked at the comment letter summary overall. In this one, we had a look at essentially two items, but you can say sort of three classes of papers. We're looking at lessor accounting generally, and then looking at the lessee model in terms of if you're the people taking the equipment into use, for example. And the part of that was looking at what we call small ticket items. So I'll focus on lessor accounting first. And by the way, we didn't reach any decisions at this meeting at all. This was really, I think, about making sure that the staff understood which areas the boards felt were potentially fruitful, where they wanted some analysis done so they can come back for a major decision-making in towards March. In terms of lessor accounting, I think most people know it's a fairly simple question. Some people think that the proposals in the exposure draft really aren't going to change the financial statements significantly, so why upset the financial statements for lessor accounting? Can't we simply keep or retain our existing guidance out of IAS 17, for example, rather than actually change the requirements? And you get some mixed signals. Some people think it's a good cohesive set of requirements if you bring the two together. Others who insisted that we couldn't go ahead without discussing lessor and lessor accounting. Some have actually said, well, maybe we should just finalise the lessee accounting and leave lessor as it is. So at the moment, that's the decision that's pending, and when we come back in March, is whether or not how far we go with the lessor accounting. Now, lessee accounting is, I guess, a little bit more dynamic in a sense, or a bit more to it, and it's very hard on a podcast, but if I was to hold my hands up and to show a spectrum of different lease arrangements, you really have one group that's either it's on balance sheet, and I hate the word drawing a line, but we're trying to identify at what point where these leases are important enough to be put onto the balance sheet. And then within that, the decision needs to be made about whether some of those should be treated as pure financing, and whether some of them should be treated as being something a bit different, where we end up with a different profile going through profit and loss. That's, in other words, that's an even amount being expensed each period. I think it's I'll come back to the not quite on balance sheet or small ticket items in a second, but I think within there's strong agreement that leases should be on balance sheet. I think a lot of the signals that we got were people would prefer one model than to two. But I think there's going to be quite a rigorous debate about what that model is, because clearly from listening to some board members, they would prefer to have what we call a type A lease, which treats everything as being financing. Of course, and associated with that, you would tend to have bigger expense up front because of the interest being, as it tails off over time. Some others would prefer to have what we call the type B, which is the flat P&L profile. So it's still on balance sheet, but you end up having equal amounts being expensed through income statement. So I think there's a lot of debate there, and there are others who would actually like to, I think, go with the ED, stick with the ED, which would mean having some of them as our what we call type B leases, particularly real estate, for example, and leaving probably the big machines and so on, things like that, as being more of a financing. Now, at the other point, at what point do we stop and say, you know, going through all this hard work and putting it onto a balance sheet isn't cost effective, and we call these things small ticket items. And there's one of the newer thoughts that has come through is whether or not we should treat those as a portfolio. In other words, you bundle all your little contracts together, and then you account for them as if they're one simple portfolio. The alternative ways to think about it is either some sort of value threshold, where if it's less than a particular total value relative to your other assets, for example, or else the length of the contract will be at 1 year, 3 years, 5 years, or something like that. So the boards are both conscious that this has to be a cost-beneficial solution, and we have to deal with the small ticket items in a sensible way. So these are big, big questions. March is the time that the staff expect to take papers back, and I think that's going to be the time where we see a clear direction on the project.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Okay, thanks very much. Look forward to further updates on that. Moving on, I think the final item we're due to discuss today, back to you, Alan, agriculture, bearer plants.
Yeah, the bearer plants. Just that is a, we exposed last year a proposal to treat, in the case of vineyards, for example, the vines as being more like a factory in a sense, and that produces the fruit that then goes into wine and so on, and the same with apple trees. So the tree would be like a factory. You'd end up treating that, depreciating that over its useful life, and treating it more like property, plant and equipment, and then fair value for the produce. We analysed the feedback that came through from all the comment letters we received, and probably the most common call was for us to think about expanding this. And you might tell from my accent, I come from New Zealand, but there are dairy cows are very important there. People saying a dairy cow is equivalent to a factory in a sense, and its product is the milk. So why can't we extend the principle? While there was some sympathy, I think, around the table from the board, there was also a clear identification. I think the comment letters reflected this as well. If we finish this restricted to plants, we can make some significant improvements for quite a large sector of the economy. Mm-hmm. And perhaps then we have a look at wider issues like whether or not it's the appropriate accounting for agricultural product more generally as part of more of a research project. And so that the idea is for us to try and get this finished as quickly as we can. But we're not going to put aside the broader issues. We'll do that as part of our research program.
Okay, so watch this space. Fantastic. Well, thank you both today. A busy week coming up for the ISB. We have the trustees meeting, IFRS Foundation trustees meeting, taking place Monday and Tuesday next week in Milan. And on Wednesday and Thursday of next week, we have our monthly meeting of the Interpretations Committee. Lots to look forward to there. We will be back next week. Just a quick health warning before I leave you. All views that you hear today were those of the presenters. They do not necessarily reflect those of the ISB. And with that, thank you very much, and we'll see you next month.